to all sensitive billeting army captains looking for unrequited love. You're listening to the Dare Daniel podcast. I'm Corky McDonald, local comedian, and like we always like to say to Nazis, have a drink, be happy. And with me as always is my film critic, Mr. Ha-Daniel Abarnes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dare Daniel Colin Cage Match. I'm singing everything Captain Corelli inspired me. Over the course of this season, of course, Cage Match, we've been going toe-to-toe with Nicolas Cage. We've been just delving deep, spelunking into those terrifying nooks, those horrifying crannies, and that toasty, delicious crunch that we all know as Nicolas Cage. And it's all for your sick and twisted amusement, you darlings.
This week's spelunking, we're reviewing the sensitive Oscar Beatty version of Cage. That's that sweet nougat that you were talking about. He stars as the titular Corelli of the largely forgotten Captain Corelli's Mandolin. The IMDb synopsis for CCM, that's what we mandolin heads call it. When a fisherman leaves to fight with the Greek army during World War II, his fiance falls in love with the local Italian commander.
Yes, it's Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Unlike the previous...
Why are you singing like Esther Williams?
I don't know. I can't stop now. It's become me. It's part of me. And help. Unlike the previous films we've reviewed on our Cage Match series, this movie was actually a prestige release. Jiu-Jitsu, Corky, there was no Oscar campaign for Jiu-Jitsu. There was no Oscar campaign for Trespass, not even for Vampire's Kiss. Are you kidding me? Sonny, forget about it. This film was conceived as true Oscar bait, a prestige release for Miramax Pictures. Certainly got a heck of a cast. Nicolas Cage, as you said, he's your titular Captain Corelli, and does he have a mandolin slung over his back? You better believe it. He stars along with the Penelope Cruz, of course, John Hurt, Christian Bale, David Morrissey, and the great Irene Pappas. Plenty of awards bait bona fides behind the camera, too, not just in front of the camera. It's directed by John Madden, not...
Yep.
The great Super Bowl winning coach / Hall of Fame commentator. I knew that's where...
Bullshit.
It's not him. Different dude. Totally different dude. Apparently this is legal. A different person named John Madden directed this movie. John Madden's previous film before Captain Corelli's Mandolin was Shakespeare in Love. Best picture winner for Miramax, Shakespeare in Love. Cinematography by the great John Toll, who won back-to-back Oscars in the 90s for Legends of the Fall and Braveheart. The script was by Sean Slovo, adapted from an acclaimed 1994 novel of the same name by British writer Louis de Bernier, released by Miramax, which at the time was on a crazy Best Picture streak. It was like they were in the midst of like a 13-year Best Picture streak. And this film fits the mold. This kind of swoony romance against this World War II backdrop, that's the formula of the English Patient. That's the formula of the Cider House Rules. It's very on brand. High hopes for this one, but it fell short. Well short of expectations. The first clue that it would fall short was the release date, August 17, 2011. Or 2001, sorry. More of a...
Hiding ground.
Mid-August is a dumping ground. That's not where you're not positioning movies for... For a Best Picture at that point. You're positioning them to maybe make a buck in a completely dead season.
This is Christopher Moltisanti burying a body on the side of the Jersey marshes.
Absolutely. Movie debuted in sixth place at the domestic box office. I mean, it premiered prior to TIFF and all of the big festivals that happen in September. Only grossed about $25 million overall in North America against a $57 million budget. Worldwide gross of $62 million still left it well short of breaking even. Critics did not buy it either. 28 on Rotten Tomatoes, 36 on Metacritic. It does have its defenders, some of them even enthusiastic. Michael Srigao of the Baltimore Sun called it, quote, heartbreaking and exhilarating, end quote. But Rita Kempley of the Washington Post took the opposite position and the more well-traveled position, writing, quote, a bungled screen version of Louis de Bernier's cult novel Captain Corelli's Mandolin was doomed from the moment Nicolas Cage was cast as the life-devouring, Puccini-loving hero, end quote, Corky. Whose side are you on? Are you Maryland or are you Washington, D.C.? Which side of that kind of, you know? Whose side are you on? Well, and do you agree with Kempley, specifically, that the casting of our man of the season, not the man for all seasons, of course. I mean, that's, you know, learn your British history, for God's sakes.
Come on. What are we doing here? Wrong podcast.
Do you agree that the casting of Cage, the mere casting of Cage, sunk this film before it even started?
He's off his game here. He's not believable in this role, and he's not the right person for this role. If this role could be sold by anybody, he wasn't up to the task at that time. It's probably the best looking movie that we've reviewed in our entire 5 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Just,
I mean,
sweeping vistas.
$57 million. They put a lot of money into it, and the director specifically is known for, like, photographing Legends of the Fall, Braveheart. These are, like, landscape movies.
The cinematographer does a lot of great, like, interior nights shots in the little hut that they live in, but holy fuck, is this a boring movie.
Oh, wow.
It is boring, and he's off his game. He drags it down.
He really is.
He is a roadblock. I mean, we'll get to it, but your three main people, Penelope Cruz, your four main people, Penelope Cruz, John Hurt, Nick Cage, Christian Bale, these are Greek and Italian people living in the world. So we're off to a rocky fucking start with
it's
the
amazing.
Casting.
It's amazing, yeah. But the accents are wild, aren't they? Aren't they wild?
Wild.
Like, his accent is wild. It's as wild as it was in Vampire's Kiss. And in that movie, he's playing a completely insane person who is imagining he said that he's a vampire. Holy fuck. This is even more of a mess.
I don't think it's a stretch to say Captain Corelli was insane. He might not have been the leader of that squadron. He was just the kind of guy they kept around. Like, he's Yossarian. He is.
Oh, right.
He
that's
is
right.
Insane.
It's a whole Kitch 22 situation where, like, there's a whole different movie about who the fuck Captain Corelli is. Yeah. No, it's pretty crazy. I was thinking about a movie I really loved from the last 10 years, which is Park Chan-wook's The Handmaiden, which is set at this very specific time in the history of Korea and Japan. And it's very clear they actually give you different colors for when someone's speaking Japanese and when someone's speaking Korean. And do you know why they do that? Because it's fucking important. It's absolutely important to understand the meaning of every single moment, to know who is speaking what language to what person, why and when and where and all of that kind of shit. Just like it's important in this movie that we know who is speaking Italian, who is speaking Greek, German, English, to which character at which time. And you know what? We never know. We never know. There's one point early on, everyone's speaking English.
Yes.
And at one point early on, the Italian soldiers huddled together. They're just like, hey, what's this? Scusi, linguine, spaghetti, ravioli. Like, what? Are you speaking Italian? What the fuck were you speaking before? When you talk to that Nazi, Gunter, what language are they saying? Everyone's just speaking accented English, and they're all speaking Italian accented English, even when they're Greek.
Even
except for
Greeks,
Penelope Cruz, of course, is speaking with a Spanish accent because she can't help it. But, oh, wow. This movie is just, it's all over the place. This formula, this best picture sort of formula, a lot of movies were made with this formula and are still made, and they throw a lot against the wall. But only a few of them stick, right? And this is just one of the ones that didn't stick, right? Like, every year you get these quote-unquote Oscar bait movies that, you know, they have all the pieces, like this one. All the pieces are there, right? Great actors, great cinematographer. You've got, like, this great location. You've got a great source material. You've got a great story. You got all this stuff.
I don't think the screenplay's
exactly.
Great.
Exactly. It's a beautifully designed vehicle with no engine, And that's why it's so tedious. Yeah. That's why it feels like it's 3 hours long when it's only 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. And that's why you never feel anything for any of these characters, even though they're going through these horrifying life and death situations that are based on real life events. There's something that is missing from this movie. There's some sort of a soul. There's some sort of a heartbeat that is missing from this movie. And I think it's something that got lost from what I read of the novel, trying to cram a square peg novel into the round hole of a Miramax Oscar hopeful in the early 2000s. Something got horribly lost. And so the movie is nothing. There's big events that happen. And we think, like, why is this happening? Why is this happening?
You don't care about a damn thing.
Well, it's because something got lost from the novel that gave this something. There's an earthquake that happens at the end of the movie that for no reason happens. For no reason. It adds nothing.
Yeah, nothing, there's no consequence.
This is a major event in the book. This is a major, major thing that happens. Nothing happens because the movie wants to play it safe. And Cage is miscast. Like, the accent is a mockery, but he's just too old. He's too old for this part. Captain Corelli seems like he should be a very young, kind of vibrant sort of a man. And Cage is just not right for this part at this point in his life.
And he should be like an innocent, almost kind of a vagabond lover of the arts who's just in this horrible situation and is trying to make the best of it and trying to make others make the best of it. Cage doesn't do that. He's too a little too maniacal. Like, he comes across as, to me, off-putting. Yeah. I was watching this movie and I was just like, oh, okay, so this is page 200. This is page 240. It's just like, we're just getting through the book. We don't know why we're getting through the book, but we're just getting through the book.
We're just hitting we're hitting the Wikipedia like bullet points.
Here's where they don't like each other. Here's where she starts to fall for him. Here's where she has fallen for him.
Yeah. And reading
it just, but you don't care.
Reading the synopsis of the novel, it really deviates, especially in the final third of the novel from where it goes at. Softens it, heightens the romantic element a lot more, as you would expect. Again, an Oscar Beatty type movie. So let's get into it. Captain Corelli's Mandolin. That's the worst fucking title. And that's the title of the book. I mean, honestly, right? Like, but that's a terrible title. I'm not interested to hear more. Where you're like, Captain Corelli's Mandolin? Like, tell me more. Like, no thanks.
Okay. You want to talk about like a really good romance, Red Violin? Now that's named after an instrument.
Sure.
It's an independent, has great stars in it, and probably was made for a shoestring with this. It looks beautiful, but I'm into it. It tells the story of that violin, but tells the story of people throughout that violin. Captain Corelli's Mandolin is just a thing. It's just a thing. It could be called Captain Corelli's Boots. Could be called Captain Corelli's Dirty Shirt. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do except for he plays his mandolin a couple times.
He plays the mandolin every now and then. And there you go. So that's his mandolin. So why is it the mandolin? Who gives a fuck? Cephalonia, Greece, 1940. We hear voices. Unmistakably, we hear the voice of John Hurt doing a bad Greek. Again, like, what accent is he doing? It's not Greek. It really sounds more Italian than Greek. I don't know. I'm not trying to like start a whole thing, but John Hurt is Giannis, the village doctor here on Cephalonia, this island off the coast of Greek. He pulls a pea out of a villager's ear, curing his deafness. Everyone is really going big in these early scenes.
Okay, we got John Hurt, we got Penelope Cruz, we got Nick Cage, we got Christian Bale, all cast as either Greek or Italian. Mm-hmm. And all the people who are actually Greek are still pouring it on. And it's like a spicy meatball. Oh, Mario Luigi.
Beautiful, though.
And it's bits.
Oh, it's lots of bits. It's lots of bits. But the landscape's beautiful. It's actually shot on the island of Cephalonia by John Toll, as we said, great cinematographer. It's a lovely looking movie. It has all of the, and they spent a decent amount of money.
Not a bad shot.
Not
in the
really,
movie.
But not that many really great shots either, which I attribute to John Madden being, you know, sort of a clay-footed clod.
I mean, he took the Raiders to the championship when before that even had.
Different dude. Nope.
What?
No, no, no. And it's not still? That. Not the video games. Not the game. Different Damn. Dude. Different dude altogether. Giannis narrating. We hear him say, "Antonio, do you remember our island? It does not change." So, okay, so like this is something is like letters, correspondence, you know, because this island is kind of remote, right? Like as we go back into this first, you know, into the past in 1940, it's an idyllic place. It's apart from the war, but the war is coming. Like the war, it's getting closer and closer every day, but it's still this idyllic place that is so far away from the war that no one's really a part of it. World War II, again, 1940s. Learn your history.
Save it for the military history podcast that we're starting soon.
Penelope Cruz is Pelagia. Why didn't they give her an easier name to say? Pelagia. She's Giannis's daughter. That's John Hurt. Yes, Penelope Cruz is John Hurt's daughter. Just like wrap your fucking mind around. I mean, come on. Sure. So this is happening. Cephalonia is this. It's a peaceful land, but it's been wrecked by all these tragedies, right? Like natural tragedies, yep. Man-made tragedies, and we open on this sort of like religious festival, and these people who are healed by faith, and Giannis calls it a psychological phenomenon. It's people who actually believe that like you can be healed by faith. None of this is anything. Honestly, I swear to God, like, no. None of this is anything. Like, what are we setting up here? We have no freaking idea. Christian Bale pops in. You're just like, oh, fuck. Like, holy fuck. Yeah. Fucking Batman's in this movie. Christian Bale shows up as Mondras. As you do when you're Christian Bale, you're Mondras, the Greek fisherman. As you fucking do. What? The fuck? What is anyone's anything in this fucking movie? And he's one of the villagers. He's dancing. They're all doing their ethnic dance.
A life is idyllic.
It's, right? In like this it's all community. It's festivals, it's fishing, it's
this is a village where the fishing, but the men are all strapping
young
lads.
The men look like Christian Bale. The women look like Penelope Cruz. My God. Like everyone is just on point.
They carry their little washing baskets down to the water. The men bring the fish in, but nothing's ever dirty or too bad.
The whole peasant, like the peasant kerchief thing. I mean, come on, forget about
it. Yeah.
So they're all dancing. There's this festival, and there's a guy shooting cannons. He's shooting a cannon full of rocks. And this is like the fucked up, like, weird tone of this movie. Like, what in the F is this movie?
Yeah.
There's this crazy slapstick thing where Mondras gets hit in the butt by rocks and is jumping around like, ay, 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 I got hit like in the fucking butt by rocks. Oh, it hurts. Oh, it hurts. And then they have him back at home. John Hurt gives him a nice big slap on the butt. I don't know if that was improvised or what happened there.
Yeah, John Hurt's like, can I get another take of that?
Going, like, where's Warren Beatty when you need him? My God. Pelagia inspects the butt too. Why is her accent thicker than her father's accent, which is just a stage accent, right? Whereas it's Penelope Cruz in 2009. Come on, just an old fucking thing. Who is anyone? They're all going big, that's for sure. Mondras and Pelagia, they're in love.
But this is how sloppy this movie is. You don't know, like, were right? they in love? Were they making eyes? Was this the culminating moment?
Have they known each other? No idea.
Her dad doesn't like him.
No.
At least doesn't like him for her. And even explicitly says, I always thought you would marry a foreigner.
Yeah.
It's like.
He says they're not equals.
The whole.
You're not going to get a
the
dowry.
Whole crux of this movie is that she's been programmed to look for a foreign love.
Right? Oh, my God.
John Hurt's the puppet master in this whole thing.
Really weirdly, he is. Like, so much of this movie in these scenes is like Hurt kind of looking at them, looking at each other, noticing them, noticing each other, right? Like, he's kind of like.
And he knows
He's seeing everything. He is three-dimensional chess, this fucking dude, right? Like, yeah, he is thinking several moves ahead. So she comes home and she's like, yeah, I'm kind of in this dude. He's like, well, you're not going to get a dowry. Forget about that. And then he's like, well, your wedding's going to have to wait. There's going to be a war. Here's a gun. Use it to kill people and then kill yourself. Like, thanks, Dad. Like, what the fuck? This is your wisdom? He's like, no wedding, no dowry because war. In the next scene, there's a military man whipping up all of the people in the village, being like, come on, you guys, yeah. Let's go to war. Join it. Let's go to war in Albania against the Italians. They're coming here. They're coming to get us. You want to talk sloppy? Then it's all of a sudden like, all right, here's a ceremony. It's like a wedding ceremony. There's a priest. There's a ring. But then they're like, when I come back, I'm going to marry you. Then what the fuck is this ceremony? What are we doing?
What are we doing here? This is an engagement.
Hey guys, what are we doing here? Ceremony? This is just for the presents? Is it just like, just want a blender? What the fuck? I mean, that's what I was like, oh, okay. So there's not going to be a wedding. And then there's a wedding. And then they're like, all right, this is our engaged to be engaged ceremony. And soon we'll have a wedding when I get back from the war. And I'm going to be just fine. And I'll be right back, right? Like, everything is just...
Right. This is like, you know, All Quiet on the Western Front, Cold Mountain. It's all the young man excited to go out to war, making all the promises.
Absolutely.
And they're saying goodbyes to everybody. We're like 45 minutes into this movie and nothing has really happened until now, right?
We still haven't met Captain Corelli where they're saying, either.
No, or the mandolin, like nothing, right? The part where they're saying goodbye to everybody, getting them on boats, the hardest hugs are happening. Like it's the most violent, like smack hug. This is like WWE style, belly to belly suplex hugs.
Yes. Promise to write. I'm going to write you all the time. Promise to write. So off to war they go. She promises to write, but whammo. I guess 6 months later, she just says summer turned to winter. That's or summer, winter turned to spring. Something turned to something. Some seasons happen. She's like, this is her 100th letter. It's a letter asking, how come you didn't write me no letters? Right? Because she hasn't had any word of him all however long this time has been. Lots of dead and wounded from the island. Lots of pain. She says, I long to feel something, even if it is only pain. She's kind of feeling like,
yikes.
Yeah, right? Like, kind
of. Riot kind of girl.
Seriously, rooting for your death just so I can, like, feel something. She's, you know, feeling like, holy shit, maybe this was just not a thing. And again, yeah, there's a newsreel. The Greeks who joined the fight, they beat back a huge battalion of Italians, but then the Nazis came in, the Nazis, they see a newsreel, the Nazis have struck back, they're occupying Athens, and now, whammo, this is now, you know, this remote island is now a center of the conflict, because, you know, it's sort of spread over to this island. Axis soldiers land on the island, wham, you know, just tanks everywhere, and jeeps everywhere, and soldiers everywhere, and who is amongst them? Captain Antonio Corelli.
But we know there's something just a little bit different about this captain, because he's got a mandolin slung on his back.
He sees Penelope Cruz and is, I mean, rightly taken aback, but still he yells,
sure,
Bella Bambina, 2 o'clock, and salutes her. Like, great line, jerk. What the fuck? But he's got like a mandolin, so it's like, oh, he's intriguing because he has a mandolin. All right, and this is where it's like, so these accents have already been insane, but now it's like we have Italian people, we have Germans, and we have Greeks. They're all speaking some kind of heavily accented English. But it's like, in a scene where all four of Germans, Greeks, or all three of Germans, Greeks, and Italians, and they're all speaking English. What the fuck language are they speaking? They're not speaking English, right?
No. This is Gladiator. This was my biggest thing with Gladiator. You have a man named Spaniard. He's in the Roman army. He goes, he fights with Germans and Africans. What language do they speak?
They somehow found a common language, right? Yet all still speaking their same Australian actors. Accent. Yeah.
But with British accents.
It's all over the place. And again, this is like important. This is important for us to know. But everyone's just speaking the same because even we'll hear like laughter in the background. Okay, so it's established that Corelli, right away, he comes to the town and he's sent right up to the mayor's office to accept the surrender. Right. And he takes a note. No one can read it. So Corelli steps up. What's the note say? Fuck off. Right? They're not going to accept a surrender to the Italians because they just beat the Italians. That doesn't make any kind of sense to them.
Right.
They'll accept a surrender to a German officer. So it's accepted that Corelli speaks many languages. That makes sense. But then why are all the soldiers laughing when he says things? Like, what language is he talking? He's not talking Italian to that German officer, right? Or to the Greek doctor. Or he is? I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. So here we are. We're on the island. A low-ranking German officer named Gunther is brought in to accept the surrender. They just say that's preferable to surrendering to an Italian. So there's a lot of animosity. That's a big part of this between the Greeks on the island and the Italians who are now occupying the island.
And the Italians and the Germans.
Between the Italians and the Germans. Yes, who are on the same side. But the Italians, especially Corelli and his group, don't really subscribe to, you know, the Nazis' plan, you know, their final solution.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they just want to sing. God damn it, they want to sing. And do they sing, Quirky? They fucking sing.
Very many do they scenes sing? Of singing.
Do they sing? They sure do. They are singing fools.
Dancing It's On had less musical numbers than Captain Corelli's mandolin.
Singing It's Off. Corelli leads the Opera Society. The Opera Society.
Yeah, fuck.
And there's a new recruit to the Opera Society. Well, he comes in and his name's Carlo. He's a very kind of stone-faced man. He doesn't sing. This was apparently a big thing cut from the novel.
You could tell that. You can totally tell that.
And Carlo's fate with an officer named Francesco, who is killed in action, who he was in love with. But yes, of course, Miramax, that doesn't really fit the Oscar formula, so bye-bye that storyline. Yes, so Carlo's just a silent guy, right? Who, again, sloppiness, from scene to scene, will be there, and then not there, and then not there, and then why are you there, and then why aren't you there? Carlo. Carlo is just all over the fucking place.
And they make a big point out of him when they introduce him.
This is a big scene where he's introduced. But he can't sing. He doesn't sing. But they're still like, you know, whatever. You're the guy who doesn't sing. Mondras. Oh, he's back. That's Christian Bale. He went off to war. He's come back.
A little PTSD. Oh,
he's a changed man. He's hairy. He's very unkempt. And he's grim. He's Dark Knight, fucking Batman grim. Now, right before he was fucking Newsies, Christian Bale, he was just like dancing, singing, just like love.
He saw his parents murdered at a movie theater
in a war-ish sort of a way in Albania, whatever the Albanian war analog of seeing your parents killed in the alley. That's what happened to Mondras. He comes back, he's weeping, he's bloodied. All of her letters are unopened because, of course, he can't read for the love of.
She should know this. She's grown up with this peasant boy on this remote island. He had no reason to learn how to read.
A little elitist of her, really assuming that he was going to get any, be able to really like write back and stuff. Yeah,
this is a man who played a prank on her during their engagement ceremony and embarrassed her in front of everybody.
Lady, but who shows up? Corelli. Captain Corelli shows up to live with him. Who's there? Carlo. And they all sit down to dinner, and guess who's not there? Carlo, where the fuck did Carlo go? Carlo showed up like he was part of the like the entourage, the Corelli entourage, and they were like, hey, it's Carlo. Look, everybody, Carlo. And then they all sit down to dinner, and you're like, where the fuck Carlo go? Is Carlo just like, Carlo's like eat in the car eating? You're like, what? Get the fuck out of here, Carlo, you piece of shit.
Go find a McDonald's and wait for me there. Pick me up after.
Corelli, to ingratiate himself, makes a joke about murdering her father.
It does not land well.
It does not land. Wrong audience to make a joke about murdering your father. Especially, this is like the day of the occupation. Italian soldiers, this is a remote island in the middle of nowhere. Italian soldiers and tanks are on their island. There's a soldier living with them.
He came in force.
He has guns. There's a guy named Carlo who's hiding somewhere doing God knows what. And he's like, here's a hilarious bit. I'm going to murder your dad. But she's a total bitch about it. Oh, fuck. Fuck. All right. In times of war, we have to make the most of what little innocent pleasure there is. That's the Corelli creed.
That's the Corelli. That's what you get when you put Captain Corelli like, in with his mandolin on your island.
Everything Corelli says and does, this inexplicably melts her butter.
It doesn't show it. She's actually pretty good in this. She's actually pretty good. But she's not given much. I mean, okay, let's talk about her character. She's a complete void. We know she's capable of being a doctor. She's smart, but all we see her is a filter of whatever man she's attracted to. First, it's Christian Bale. Then it's Captain Corelli, and that's it. That her future, her hopes and dreams, her happiness, all hinge on these men being in her life. But we don't see why. We don't see how. It just all of a sudden is.
No, and it really doesn't make any sense given what we see on screen. She has more... So by this point of the movie, she's in this transition, right? Where she's realized, you know what? I don't love Mondras. I'm not loving
right.
her. Whereas this Corelli is like opening up her world. Wow, he's singing Puccini. He's coming here. He's like has the zest for life. She and Bale have more accidental chemistry than
100%
she and Gage have intentional chemistry. Just like
holy
by like being like two really fucking hot people, being two crazy hot people. We're like, I want to see you kiss and make out and like do things to each other. I don't want to see that with Nicolas Cage. You know what I mean?
No, you fucking nailed it. You nailed it.
It's inexplicable because, and even when he gets all dark and hair like furry. There's still more chemistry. It's like,
yeah.
Why is she into this guy? No fucking idea. Mondras suggests murdering him. Corelli, in the next scene, comes home drunk, flirting with her, very aggressively flirting, throwing flowers around. Giannis, that's John Hurt, remember, says, this might be a good time for you to play your mandolin. Why? Sure, play the damn mandolin. Which starts this like kind of, it starts as sort of like a comedy bit of like he's just tapping the mandolin because like the first 45 measures the mandolin doesn't come in or whatever. And John Hurt, you know, makes a big speech and then is like storms off, at which point he finally does start playing. And he plays very beautifully. Plays very beautifully just for Pelagia, which once again, her butter is melted.
Right.
Wowie zowie. She is... Drizzle her over some popcorn because holy moly. Mondras, for his part, he tries to push Corelli's buttons a little bit. We're really setting up this love triangle here, right? Like, okay, Corelli is obviously in there. I mean, who wouldn't be? Mondras, you know... He's got dibs.
And she's inexplicably
and she's torn for some reason. Even though, like, who? What? Who? Why? But he, like, kisses her. Mondras kisses her in front of Corelli. Corelli's just like, and then takes off. He's just, we're in, this is like the start of the second act. He doesn't come back until the third.
I'll leave you alone.
He's like, all right, get you nice, hot, and bothered. All right, see ya. So off he goes. Then we get the scene of, so prostitutes have come to the island along with the soldiers. And they're all just singing on the beach. They're frolicking on the beach. They're naked. Pelahiya is watching them. This little girl from the village sees them. The Nazi soldier, the one who accepted the surrender from earlier, this is Gunter. He walks up and he says, Heil Hitler. At which Corelli says, Heil Puccini. He loves Puccini and he's a free spirit. You get it?
Yeah.
Good times. So this is the whole thing on the beach. They mess with him a little bit, but the Gunter is kind of, he's pretty good natured. This is kind of like a surprising thing.
He's a soft nut. Yeah,
in the book, I think this is another thing that is probably done with a little more nuance, and it's not done with nuance here. But yes, he's a Nazi with a heart of gold. It's basically what the deal is with Gunter. Corelli comes back to the house, and Pelahiya pulls out the gun. He's like, I'm going to fucking murder you, motherfucker. Quit your fucking singing. No more singing. God damn it.
And she's like, so who were those women? Like that's probably her motivation than anything.
And he sympathizes with her. She says, all you do is sing. What is there to sing about? And while he feels for her, he feels her hurt, and he apologizes for hurting her. But do you know what he won't apologize for, Quirky? Singing! I won't apologize for singing! Is basically what happens.
This scene is what they would play on the, the Oscar ceremony. And I'm just watching, I'm like... Oh, he's off his game. This is not good. I see the speech that's supposed to be happening, and that's not what's happening.
Not working. It's just not working. Something's not there. Like I say, it's all the pieces are in place, but there's just nothing inside. There's nothing that makes it go. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, it's a story, and it's chemistry, and it's artistry that makes it go, and there's none of that here. It's bad. Something about the story is just so fucking wrong. And again, this is why this really feels like a 3 hour plus movie. If I just watched the movie, didn't look at the running time the entire time, and at the end you were like, how long was that movie? I would have guessed like 195 minutes. It was like, no way was Godfather 2 longer than this fucking movie. No fucking way. This movie is crazy long. Right. No, it's There's 2 hours long. It's
fucking, there's the line from Harry Met Sally. It's like, when you realize who you want to spend the rest of your life with, you want the rest of your life to start right away. I felt like I was watching the rest of my life in this movie. Just like, I was like, this fucker's not ending. I'm making dinner while I'm like poking my head out of the kitchen just because I wanted to be so doing something.
Bye bye. So Corelli's like, all right, I got to get out of here. She no like me, I Corelli. So he packs to leave, but Dad. So the reason Corelli's there is because Dad has made a deal with the quartermaster.
It's the whole
this
reason.
This is it. Which it comes back a couple of times, but like this is the big. You're like, well, why the fuck doesn't just leave? Well, this is why, because Dad wants these medical supplies, and the quartermaster has said, okay, well, we'll make a deal. If you let these guys stay at your house, then. You let Corelli and maybe Carlo or not? I guess not. I don't. Where the fuck is Carlo?
Carlo just sleeps in the Jeep outside. Okay? He's like All Quiet from the West on the Western Front. He's the cat character. The experienced soldier. Yep. The one who is just gonna make it right until he doesn't. But like that poor guy's probably just sleeping in bushes and he's fine. He's just comfortable. He's looking at the picture of his girl or his guy. He's using his helmet as a pillow. Like, he's that tough of a soldier.
Oh, absolutely. Steel helmet. Level this dude. But yeah, Dad doesn't want to... Giannis doesn't want to queer the deal, and that's why he's like, no, Corelli, you stay. You stay with my daughter. You stay. He doesn't say it like that, but it's just his Ben.
No, he's John Hurdy. You stay.
You stay. You place.
You stay. Very smoky
voice.
Oh,
my Greek by Arlon.
So, a big dance in the village square. We had a big dance. Everybody get together and we dance big.
Yeah, this is the Nazi in brown shirt cotillion.
Yeah, right? This is cabaret all over again.
Good call.
So, there's a sort of like... This sort of flirtation that goes on where Corelli starts to walk over to her. She sees him coming and she's like, oh no, he's coming to ask me to dance, so I'm taking off. So she takes off, but he goes to her friend who she was sitting next to. And then she sees that from afar, like, aye. We come into their conversation and he's actually asking her to dance for Gunther, the Nazi, who has a little crush on this cute little islander, this little Greek islander.
She likes the Nazi. And she's looking at it and she's like, too.
I like the cut of your jib, Nazi.
Mr. Brown hair Nazi.
Nazi son of a bitch. So then she's like, all right, well, here I go. Am I going to go? She's like, I'm going to go to Corelli. No, I'm going to go to some other guy, some other soldier. So she picks some other soldier to dance. They immediately like steal the show. They're doing this.
Scent of a woman.
Oh, absolutely. They're doing a tango. Yeah. It's Penelope Cruz, so it's sensual. It can't not be sensual, my God. So they're stealing the show. Everyone stops. We got a whole dance circle thing going on. She's doing kicks. It's a fantastic thing. She spins around at the end, and it's all for Corelli. Because she spins around, and she looks right at him, and her hair, of course, is all tussled, and ay.
Ugh.
But it's all for Corelli. He sees it, and Giannis sees him seeing it, and other people are seeing them. This is the whole fucking movie. I mean, come on. Jesus Christ. This would be awesome if we cared about any of these people for any reason.
100%.
But we don't. We just don't.
But this was the one part I believed Cage in, the part where... While she's dancing with this other guy trying to make him jealous, he's like trying to pretend like he's not watching and talking to other soldiers like, you guys get to bed early tonight, you know, like, you need a couple bucks? Dad's got a couple bucks. Don't tell mom.
It's a Puccini day tomorrow at the Opera Society. Don't forget. Penelope Cruz. So the Italian soldiers find this World War One. Landmine, a Turkish landmine that is washed up on the beach of this island, and they decide
the little girl finds it, Lemony. And I swore I wanted her to run up and touch the blow up. I was like, fucking something happened, please
give me something. Nothing's happening. No, that doesn't happen. Instead, the soldiers go up and they're like, oh, holy shit, what's going on? Let's explode it for a show, right? And again, obviously, this is Corelli's battalion. Yeah. He's putting on a show to impress Pelagia.
They don't live in Oregon. They don't have rotting whale carcasses to blow up for everybody.
Unfortunately, no. Just World War One landmines. So they're going to explode it from this remote bunker. Oh, the line's not long enough, so we're going to move the bunker a little closer. Move it closer. Blow it up. The explosion blasts right through Corelli's bunker. She immediately runs to him. This is the start of a lot of running to various things by Penelope Cruz. It got me thinking, I don't remember off the top of my head when Vanilla Sky was made, but she got involved with Tom Cruise. I'm wondering if this is Tom Cruise's influence. He's like, listen, run. Just seriously run. What are you running to? What are you running from? Doesn't matter. Just run. You're just running.
Intense
you're
face.
You're very
run.
Tense and you're running. And people are like, holy fuck, you're running. That's serious shit. What are you running to? It doesn't matter. And here, guess what? It doesn't
matter.
But
again.
Matter.
Giannis notices her running.
Giannis is always there to notice.
He just noticed the night before another
thing. Right? Like, okay, we get it. You noticed. This whole sequence could have been cut. But you know what? It's probably like a famous sequence from the book, just like the earthquake sequence that happens later. It's a big sequence from the book and couldn't be cut, but also in this movie has no meaning or function or reason or anything like that. This is nothing. Didn't need to happen. Could have cut it. Didn't. Here it is.
It'd be funny if, like, just like the dance the night before, she went over and started tending someone else's wounds just to make him jealous.
Yeah. So he's fine. He's fine. He's temporarily deaf, but he turns fine. Next thing you know, the Italians, they're right back to singing their damn Puccini. I mean, they just can't stop with their Puccini. My God. The Italian girl who had a little Nazi crush going on, she gives the Nazi a little kiss. Because he's going to give her his record player or something like that. So she's like...
Oh, and two guys holding beers.
Oh, very grim-faced men. And noticeably dark-skinned men. Which...
Darker than the rest of the Greeks and Italians.
We're really coding as bad, evil, wrong, violent. Because what happens to her later is pretty fucking ugly. It's not a great movie. Like, can we just say that? It's a bad movie.
It's pretty. It's pretty. It's nice to look at.
That's all it is. But I don't know if you could make an ugly movie shooting on this landscape with the amount of money that they had to shoot it and the amount of talent behind the game. All right. So Corelli and Gunter, they argue about morality because Corelli's not one of these Nazis, all right? The Italian... Corelli plays the mandolin. Pelagia melts as any woman would when a man plays a mandolin. Sure. He calls it Pelagia's song. She storms off. He stands up. Yana sees it. Other people see it. Everyone sees them, seeing them, seeing them, seeing it. We fucking get it. The next day, she's out in the woods. All alone.
Dressed like Alice from Brady Bunch.
So one man could resist her. The score is horny as fuck. The score is wet.
The second I saw her walking carrying that basket in the woods, I was like, I know this setup. I've watched enough late night cinematics.
Right, this is some Red Shoe Diary shit right here. Corelli rides up on a motorcycle.
Oh my god.
And he
thunder between
just
his legs.
Jumps down off of the cycle, and he just professes his love. He's just like, I love you. Boom.
It is pure revolution. Daisy and what's his name? Just they know where to find each other. They know where to be secretive. And it could, this is it right here. Like you nailed it earlier about the chemistry thing. This is a boring ass romantic sex scene. I didn't give a shit about this.
The only way they can make it enticing at all is through editing, right? Because the way that it goes is that they come, she's all into it. Like, okay, wow, homina. They make out, they go down, the movie cuts away in a seemingly kind of like, all right, you know, we're being very PG-13-ish here.
Yeah.
No, then we cut to her sort of walking through the woods and remembering it, right? So it's like,
yes.
If,
to build tension.
If not for that, not for adding that and her like remembering it and kind of like, ooh, swooning a little bit. And of course, again, it's Penelope freaking Cruz, for God's sakes. And we get some nudity. We get some nipples and armpit hair, for God's sakes. You know, hey, hats off. But yeah, the movie only through the editing can create any kind of like passion or anything like that. There's nothing like, and we don't see anything of Cage in this at all. It's really kind of all about her. She comes.
They don't look like they want to be.
Not really.
Kissing.
No. I couldn't imagine there was any off-screen chemistry between the two. She comes home and Dad knows. He just knows right away.
Yeah.
Look in her eye. He knows she's had a mandolin in her Corelli.
Oh, jeez.
Or vice versa. I don't know. But he knows. He knows. And he talks about love. And he gives a very weird definition of what love is that is kind of messed up. And then he finally, he gets a very strange metaphor. I couldn't remember what it was. But he finally arrives at love itself is what is left over after being in love has burned away. Like, okay. Not really. And finally, he leaves it at pray for the liberation of the island. So here's like all of our themes intersecting right here, right? Like love, war, God slash faith, you know, pray for the war to end. That's the only way that love can come in, right? So it's all of these like elements of like natural elements, man-made elements, everything kind of coming together. Who gives a fuck? Who gives a fuck? Because we haven't established that we should care. Why should we care about it? The only reason I cared about this movie was Penelope Cruz in a series of peasant outfits. I'm sorry. That pushes some buttons. But the rest of this movie is complete garbage. Who gives a fuck? So Pelahiya, after this big speech from her dad, she goes to Mondras's mom to break up with Mondras's mom. Right? She's like, hey, Mondras's mom, super into Mondras, totally want to be friends. She's like halfway into it, and then guess who's there? Mondras.
Hey, buddy. We were just talking about you, buddy. Hi. You're looking grimmer than ever.
How? Did you watch your parents die in an alley? What happened there? And he's all business, all communist partisan business, which the communist thing is just played for laughs. But he wants to set up a meeting with Corelli. Like, come get your Corelli to come and here meet with the partisans, right? Meanwhile, the news, thank you, filling us in news, allies, they've landed on Italy. Surrender is coming. Surrender came. The Italians, they're singing, we're going home. We go home. We play mandolin. We go home. But needle scratch. Those damn Nazis. It's always one thing or another with them. Turns out the Italians had a surrender to the Germans. Our former allies. So Corelli... Like, all the scenes here feel like they're out of order now, because in the next scene, Corelli goes to meet the partisans. Like, we have the scene where they're like, go meet the partisans. Then they're like, hey, we got to surrender to the Nazis. Then they goes to see the partisans. I mean, what is even happening here? It's just all over the fucking place. So Corelli goes to meet the partisans, who are just Mondras. Mondras, and he's got a couple of flunkies, but it's always just Mondras, which is a Christian Bale character. And the partisans, they want weapons. They want weapons. And Corelli's like, what are you, crazy? I give you mandolin. They don't want the mandolin. They want the weapons, even though don't they know that the mandolin is the greatest weapon of all because of love. I don't know what the hell. There's no point to any of this. It's just... And what's kind of fucked up is like, it's paying homage to these real events, but it's not really paying homage at all, because it's really exploiting these like real events that happen, as we'll kind of get into in this sort of last part here. But Mondras leaves him with advice. Solid advice. Don't trust the Germans. I mean, A-plus advice, Mondras. No one's questioning that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Corelli's like, I don't know. The next day... Whammo, they're just ambushed. But they're just like, hey, we're going out. We're driving our tanks. Boom, ambush, Germans. Hey, what do you want? Don't you want to go home? We're going to go home. I'm going to guarantee, Gunter's there, guaranteeing you safe passes. Lay down your weapons. Everything's fine. And then suddenly a disobedient soldier like ignites like a melee kind of thing. Right? Like, so he just flicks a soldier at a Nazi. And then boom, 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 boom. Four Italian soldiers in Corelli's company are dead. Whammo. Corelli is off his mandolin with rage.
Yeah, no. He's pissed. He lost the tenor, two castratos, and an alto.
Castrato them himself.
Yes. You join that company, you're getting castratoed.
Corelli is furious. Furious with rage. La, 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 la. But don't worry, says the Nazi. I guarantee your safety. Wink. While also...
Surprise, Nazis are bad guys.
Called Mondras. Because he's also lying about his involvement. Gunter had said, you know, this Nazi officer. It's coming straight for him. And then he's like, I didn't do it. I swear, you'll get me fine. All good. So Corelli sees right through it, and he's like, let's loot the armory. We're going to deliver the weapons to the partisans. And off goes Akaleli to fight. Him and Pelagia have a tearful goodbye. Nothing. Nothing. I felt nothing. She's crying
at all.
When it's over, you will come back to me. She says, I want to lay down in the road to prevent you from leaving. I felt nothing. That's a very passionate statement to say. I want to lay down in the road and say either run over me or stay, right? Like basically kill me or say, I felt nothing. Nothing came from either performance. Nothing came from the screen. The score did its job. It tried its hardest. God bless it. But no sale. No sale whatsoever. So now we have kind of... So the movie now goes for sort of like a big, epic, sort of action-y war battle end. A big conclusion with a lot of big explosions. So there's a big aerial assault on the island. And, you know, I mean, for the most part, this looks pretty good.
It looks it's good.
It's not cut together that well. It's not shot or directed that well. I mean, I give John Toll credit, but again, this is just the director being kind of like a little leaden, and the fact that this movie probably was the victim of some severe cutting by the studio to, you know, get it to be the sort of movie that they wanted it to be at whatever cost. And the cost was the soul and any kind of, you know, comprehension or any meaning or any feeling to any of this. So this assault happens, and guess what Pelagia does? She runs. Like, she starts running at the start of this. Like, where's she running to? I don't know where she's running to. She just takes off running. In all of the chaos of this, you know, like, the Germans have planes, they have tanks, things are happening, the partisans are fighting back. Those grim-faced, dark-skinned partisans from before, they take the Nazi kisser right in front of Mondras. And they just take him on. Mondras does absolutely nothing. We later see that she was hung from a tree. Like, they just executed her for being a whore, for actually kissing the cheek.
Committed the war crime of being a horny woman.
All of this, I mean, this goes on for like 10 minutes or so, explosions everywhere. Like, Pelagia is still running. Like, at the end of this, the battle is long over. The battle has ended like an hour ago, and Pelagia is still running. She comes into the square, and the Nazis have already flown a flag in the square. You're like, damn, it's a small island, I thought. How long were you running? Yeah. But she was just running and running and running. And... you know, long story short, it did not go well for the Italians or the Greeks. Again, the Nazi kisser was hung. A lot of people were killed. Corelli was captured. Him and his men are taken. He sees Gunter. Hey, Gunter, old buddy, what are you doing?
Gunter
can't face him. And why? Because it's an ambush. They were all massacred. They all go down except Carlo. Remember Carlo, the non-singer? He leaps in front of Corelli. He had earlier promised during the first tearful
goodbye that's right.
to Pelagia that he would look out. He would try to save her because he knows how she feels. He knows how she feels. Again, this is a whole storyline where he has a love for another man who he sees killed in front of him, and this is not part of the movie at all. It was completely cut from the film.
Makes way more sense now.
Why was he doing anything he was doing? So anyway, yes, Carlo saves him. He leaps in front of him and just stops enough of the bullets. The Nazis kind of pack up. They very coldly leave the scene, whereas Gunter stays behind. He's very shaken. He shoots one of the soldiers in the face, but then he sees Corelli, and he can't bring him to do it. He spares Corelli.
Captain Corelli's mandolin is so fucking powerful. Mm. It melted the heart of a Nazi officer who just oversaw the shooting death of 24 men. Can't kill this guy.
Now, the real event that this is based on, the real massacre, 5,000 soldiers were killed.
Jesus.
These soldiers who fought back against the Nazis. 5,000. We see like 12 or 13 people Get-Go, they soften it so much. I don't know why. Like, it's based on a real story. In the book, it's the real story. But here, it's just like a few people. And that's it. It's just these. It's just Corelli. Corelli's group is like all of the soldiers that we ever really...
It's tacky when you sit back and they're like, they wanted to, they didn't want to go too hard. They wanted an Oscar more than anything.
Exactly. So that night, who is looting the scene, look for live bodies, but Mondras. And Mondras finds Corelli. Corelli's still alive. He delivers him to Giannis and to Pelagia. They don't have the tools. They don't have the anesthesia. They don't have anything. All they got is like some brandy or something like that.
And love. And the power of love.
And a mandolin. It turns out they use parts in the mandolin to save him. He wakes and boom, they save him. All night, they do it. Corelli wakes up. He's still very shaken by the tragedy. And in the coming days, he's feeling like a real weight of guilt. He wants to surrender to save her. He says, I don't belong here. You know, the people are searching for him on the island. The Nazis are basically just like terrorizing the island now as he's hiding. They're looking for the Italians everywhere, but they're just storming into people's homes. There's a scene where they take a woman. It's just kind of one of the villagers that we see. And this little girl, Lemony, who we see throughout. They take her and she's pulled away. Pelohia pulls away the daughter and she's executed as she's telling, screaming to her daughter, like, I'll be back, I'll be back. And she's executed. So all of this happens. It's just horrors all over the island. Meanwhile, Corelli is ferried out of the house by Mondras. Mondras helps Corelli escape. We get yet another unconvincingly emotional farewell between Corelli and Pelagia, really hammering home how little we give a fuck about these people. Like, it's like more screen time together is not going to help, honestly. Really, yeah. Like the heart, let the heart grow fonder. And off goes Corelli, maybe to never see them again.
It's funny though, because that beach, they're doing this nighttime like escape. And it is the most well-lit on their face beach. Everything else is shrouded in the deepest, blackest. But like somewhere there's two lights shining perfectly on their faces. And it made me think, like in these like movies where we got to funnel someone out and they're saying their romantic, tearful goodbye. Is it really that romantic unless you have someone who's sitting there going, we've got to go.
Yeah, right.
It's we've got to go.
If we just have all day. It gets awkward after a while. Like someone needs to break us up.
Those Before Sunset movies were bullshit. This is like, we've got to go now.
Right.
Hurry it up.
We can't have all night to talk. Pure death. She sends off Corelli. She comes home. There's Mondras. Who cares? She says, why did you save him? And he says, I wanted you to love me. They're from the same island. Like, FYI.
He's from the south of the island, though. That's where the accent's a little different.
He's from the south of this island. Well, and he recites to her last letter. The letter that we heard kind of in the first act of the movie, this really shattering letter where she's like, I don't know if I love you anymore. I had been holding on. I don't feel anything. He recites it from memory. She gives him his ring back, and he leaves. Off he goes. This very heavily differs from what's in the novel. Much darker in the novel, and he does not go quite so gently into that goodnight. But off he goes. Bye-bye, Mondras, who cares? Giannis now narrates, war is over. Everything's fine. The island's back together. Hang ten. La-dee frickin' da. The year is 1947. And there's a package. Hello, we got a package from Italy. It's from Italy and it's for Pelagia. It's a record. And what is it? It's a song, Pelagia's song. But there's no note, just a record. And she's like, fuck this record. Piece of garbage. Not into it. So now Giannis writes to Antonio. Now we're coming all the way back to the beginning. This is the letter that Giannis was writing from the very beginning. Antonio, do you remember our island? Nothing changes. He writes to Antonio. He says, Pelagia is still hot for your mandolin. Get your Corelli ass to the fucking island. He has his address. I guess she could have wrote at any time. But I mean, she did have some previous issues with like mail correspondence, not getting answers. So maybe she was like, you know what? You write or I don't write. Fuck you. And he never wrote. He never wrote. Why not? I don't know. I don't know. No good reason. In the novel, there's a sort of good reason, as far as I can tell. No good reason here. Earthquake. Earthquake. House Yawn. Ripped apart. Yeah. Village leveled.
Nothing happens to any character.
Runs. And everyone's fine. Giannis is fine. Everyone's fine. Lemony's fine. They're all fine. Moving on. This is a big thing in the book. They also move the earthquake like back 6 years for some reason. This is a real earthquake. This earthquake actually happened. It was a real thing after all of the tragedy that happened in World War II. What they don't also talk about is that 5,000 soldiers were killed, but then several thousand soldiers who were not murdered by the Nazis were killed in a shipwreck. Their ship hit a landmine, and several thousand people died, POWs. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy, and this just happens.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it. Everyone's okay. Moving on. We're back now to that festival. Remember that religious festival? From the very beginning. Because we're just like, there was no point to that earthquake sequence, so now here we go. We're just back at the festival. Giannis is there. They're all back where they were at the very beginning. Life goes on. They're all still dancing.
This is Giannis is the doctor. He's the man of science. He's always saying, you know, I'm not religious, or that's a psychological phenomenon. Yet he's the first one to espouse, if the gods will this, it is meant to be.
Yeah.
It's like those two things don't concern.
All over the place, this guy. All over the place. So Giannis is there. We're all back at the very beginning. Rock cannon guy is shooting the rock cannons. Giannis in the crowd sees who? Corelli! And he smiles. Corelli's in his civvies. He's got shorter hair. And he goes and he sees Pelagia. And he tells her, I tried to live without you. They embrace. She cries. And that's it. Last shot is the villagers walking back to the village. Life goes on in this little idyllic paradise. The end. Pointless. Completely, completely fucking pointless. Pointless movie. Hammered home at the very end where you're just like, oh, they're just walking back to the village. We just started over again. Thoroughly pointless. Bad movie. Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Quirky. Final thoughts. Before we blow this movie up on the beach for a good show for the goddamn villagers.
Just pure abject dullery. It was so tedious. Boring and slow and tedious.
Thoroughly tedious. Yeah,
exactly. Nothing needed to happen in that movie. Like, things happened. They just happened. People fell in love because they just fell in love. There was like no feeling of why I understand any of this. Beautifully shot. It looked nice, but it wasn't enough to carry me through. So boring. Yeah. And for the point of this whole season, Cage was wrong. He was wrong for this. Like,
absolutely wrong for the part.
It's a weird feeling to see him trying to do this thing, and he wasn't up to the task. And usually he's up to the task where he like just kind of does his own thing. He sucked some of the life out of this one.
I agree. It's an unusually like studied performance from him. It feels very like, it feels really like thought out in a weird way. Whereas with Cage, it often feels like he's just going on like pure like id and instinct and feeling. And this just feels like he's completely boxed in by this character and by what the expectations are. of this type of a movie are, and he's totally wrong for it, and he has no...
Right.
I don't know. I just think that, like, with the expectations that were probably on this movie, there was no freedom for him to be like, all right, what if I just went wild with this shit? What if I just riffed wildly? What if I did this? What if I did that? Corelli, I said, who the fuck is Corelli? He's just a guy who likes to sing?
Yeah.
That's all yeah. I got. That's all I got.
How do you get to captain?
How the fuck did Corelli? Yeah, well, I mean, it is the.
He says he's never seen any
it's
action.
The Italian army. Yeah, he's never seen any action. None of his crew has seen action except for Carlo. Carlo has had a rich, rich life that will constantly be off screen. Oh, Carlo.
Ugh.
All right. Terrible movie.
You know, and I'll say this, like, we called it an overlooked film because do we say overlooked or forgotten about?
Largely forgotten. Yeah.
Largely forgotten. Okay. Yeah. Not overlooked. That's the difference, I would say, is like some movies deserve to be kind of largely forgotten. This is not like a hidden gem. This isn't one where you can revisit and go, oh, wow, this movie just got. No. There's a reason this didn't
Absolutely.
Do well. It was not good.
Like I said at the beginning, there's always these movies every year that they're positioned for Oscars. They seem to have all the elements of a movie that is going to be nominated for Oscars or win Oscars. But there's just something like missing inside. An Oscar bait movie doesn't have to be bad. It can be very good and still have all of those elements. There's something empty in this movie. There's some kind of empty heart or soul that is really missing from this movie. All the pieces are there. Yeah. Location, cast, and everything. But just, it's just not good. It's just not good. It's very forgettable and forgettable for a reason.
All right, that's all we have for you on this episode of Dare Daniel Cage Match, but we're going to be back in 2 weeks to review another Cage performance in another Cage movie.
Until then, be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram, collectively known as The Schmied. Like and rate us on your favorite podcast app. If you want to support the show, support our mission, support our fight against Nick Cage, visit daredaniel.com, find the donate button, click support the show in the menu. For Dare Daniel, I am your host, film critic Daniel Barnes.
And I am Corky McDonald saying, oh, Puccini!
Good stuff.